national plan that encapsulates all these different anecdotal issues that we're hearing about across the country.
And what about this tracking system that the federal government has? I mean, in a world where Google knows exactly where every individual is based on the on their smartphone and their GPS, what is the tracking system that the federal government is using? Is it relying on the states once the doses are delivered to let them know what's happened, or is it continuing to track the vaccine shipments?
I think this is one of the biggest stories right now, and sort of an underreported issue, is the lack of concrete, reliable, comprehensive data at the federal government level. So the way that the federal government tracks the vaccine distribution, they rely on a slew of different streams of data, including state
Erin,
data.
Erin, we have 20 seconds.
Data from Tiberius, which is the Pentagon tracking system, but there are lags in reporting, and the data that they're looking at is just not reliable enough to understand what the issue is. And so that's what they're working on now. How do we get better data so we can diagnose the issue?
Erin Vanko, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and we will link to your piece, Millions of Vaccine Doses Are MIA, Feds Aren't Sure Why. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Wear a mask, stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hi, everyone. I'm Henry, and I'd like to invite you to listen to Fortress on a Hill on KBOO Portland. My co-hosts and I are three leftist veterans that aim to expose the reality of the U.S. military's multiple wars abroad and illuminate the damage military service does to Americans and foreign citizens around the world. How can we stand by and do nothing while our military kills and destroys the lives the world over, while telling Americans that all this death and destruction protects them from terrorists, when nothing could be more false? Fortress on a Hill aims to change that. You can listen to us at 9 a.m. on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month, right here on KBOO. And thanks.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Wednesday. It's time for the Wednesday Talk Radio program with your host, Paul Roland. Keep it locked right here on your Community Connection.
And good morning, everybody out there in radio land, or you could be listening on some other device. They're all good as far as we're concerned. I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We have two guests this morning to talk about the fate and the fight over the Hazelnut Grove Village, which just about a week ago, the city decide to shut down services to after just over 5 years of operation. It started in October 2015. It's between the right at the intersection of North Greeley and Interstate in North Portland there, just above the, you know, the Willamette River North Portland Industrial Zone, and just below the Overlook neighborhood, just above. It's on a slope, and it was inspired by the examples of Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village, to pioneers in self-governing villages for formerly houseless people to transition into back into a housing situation. And We've got two guests who are residents there at the Hazelnut Grove Village. Josh will be on for the entire hour, and Jesse will be on for 10, 15, 20 minutes to allow one of the other line to be opened up for callers, as we're all calling into the station. We only have in our antiquated phone patch system only allows for that to happen. So without further ado, let me welcome in Josh first. Hello, Josh.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And Jesse, are you also with us?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Well, since you're going to be here a little bit shorter, Jesse, maybe start out with you and just give us, you know, a little bit of your personal background and how long you've been staying there at the village.
Okay. My personal background, my name is Jesse. We've been here at the village since 2017. Me and Jackie, we started another a camp over in Southeast Portland, and then the city backpedaled, so we came here. We've been here all the time, and then they asked us to stay here. Other than that, I've been homeless for like, how long have we been homeless? 5 years?
Yeah.
I've been homeless for 5 years now, and me and my girl Jackie, and we like it here. It's wonderful here. Just, we put a lot, it's pretty, I mean, a lot of people probably see it as being not good conditions, but I mean, it's warm. We're warm. We have everything we need here. You know what I mean? And about going to the new village is kind of crazy because the houses are smaller, and there's not gonna, some of us has dogs. There's not gonna be room. You know what I mean? So it doesn't make any sense for them to move us when they're gonna pay them. They're gonna pay the church to how much? $2,400 a month. You know what I mean? When they could just for 5 years, but that's not a permanent spot for us. You know, and the deal, the what they told us, they'd bring us. We could stay here until we had a permanent place to go to, and then just uprooting us and moving over there. That's not a permanent place because the church can say at any time, "Hey."
Okay. Well, people probably aren't that familiar with you know what the city's plans are. There's a bunch of different things to talk about. And I mean, it sounds like you're talking with your partner Jackie at the same time. It might be a little awkward. I'll just encourage you to
I'll go here
a little bit.
I talked to her. She talks to me.
Good. Let me just go to Josh and welcome Josh in, and you tell about your story, how you got to Hazelnut Grove, and how long you've been there.
Yeah, I've been here since around the same time, 2017. I was staying with a friend before that in St. John's, and coming, I was before I moved into the Grove, I was coming by this area on a pretty regular basis. To take my kid to school. There's a elementary school right near here where I used to take her in the morning, drop her off, and so I would do a lot of walking between St. John's and this neighborhood to do that. And so when I moved into the Grove, it was a much more convenient for me to just go over to their place, pick her up in the morning, take her to the Grove, take her to elementary school.
So you were, I guess, what you'd call one of the uncounted houseless people, one of the many, many people who, you know, were probably, especially after the financial meltdown, I don't know about your particular story, but who, you know, people who've been living on people's friends' couches or family's couches or garages or wherever. So you're probably not one of the formerly houseless people who we see so many of living outside in tents and cardboard shacks and whatever around the city. I'll try to just go back and forth.
Okay.
So let me go back to let me just continue with you for just a second. So I said that the city was planning on I guess it means shutting the camp down. Just give us a little thumbnail of what the scenario is right now.
Was it me?
Well.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Jesse.
The scenario right now is that some of us are gonna go move there, and the rest of us are gonna stay here. And just if we can't get it organized or straightened out, we're gonna stand our ground. We have a couple of things going. We've been talking to a lawyer right now, and the city just wants to move us. And I don't understand why, because most of the neighborhood here are for us. It's just one person.
Where do they want to move you, first of all?
They want to move us to St. John's, and originally they were going to move us to a spot that they probably have in St. John's, but it was in between a school and a nursing home. Well, they balked about that, so then somehow they got to the mayor, and they backed out, and then the church got involved because they were going under, and now they're paying them. They're going to pay them $2,500 a month to move us there.
Okay.
And they're moving us in smaller houses.
Like a church parking lot?
No, it's a grassy area. It's a nice area, and it will be a nice place, but it's really not efficient because the houses are smaller. And originally, when this all started, the houses were supposed to be bigger, and they're supposed to be 10 by 12. And now the houses that they built are 10 by 8, and they got stuff built into it which makes you comfortable, but there's no room for moving in there. And then I have a dog, you know what I mean? And a couple of us have dogs, and he's a big dog, so. It's just not, and there's no buses that can go over there because the dogs can't go on the bus unless they are service dogs. They can go on that, but that's it. So it's a good move for some reasons, and it's not a good move. For us, it's really not a good move when they could just let this place go as it was, because we've been here for 5 years. We have never had any problems down here with the law or in the spot. We haven't had any of that. We pretty much just do what we have to do. We help out. Like a tree just came down here in the bike path. We cleaned it up, but the city didn't come down here and do it.
So I was reading a little bit about the history. As I said, it started in October 2015. It sounds like it was some of the people who were organizers, participants in the Occupy 2011 Portland. Occupy Portland camp downtown. They had continued by camping on the sidewalk, but they had to pack up their tents after the night and spend most of the day carrying their possessions with them. So a bunch of those people then ended up, Sisters of the Road Cafe has a garden plot there. Or it's a forest garden right next door, and so some people decide to move over there on city land. But now apparently and I want to get to Josh and ask you this, you probably know too, Jesse, but Josh, what reasons are the city giving? Because I understand that relations have been basically pretty decent with the city over the years. Do you know what's changed? What have they said to you about this change, especially coming now in the middle of winter?
Yeah. The main reasons they seem to be giving have to do with safety. They talk about fire risks, landslide risks, pollution that is apparently here. We're, you know, near a fairly busy street, ground pollution. There's all kinds of different factors that they throw out that seems pretty extreme and exaggerated for those of us who've been here for so long, and where it feels very safe and sound, and sound structures.
So what sort of sanitary facilities are there?
Two porta potties that get serviced regularly. There's a dumpster right here that gets emptied on a regular basis. And for water, there's a large tank, several hundred gallon tank, that gets refilled once a month, I believe.
And One thing I read, there's a petition out, by the way, which is on my program page at KBOO.FM, Wednesday Talk Radio, petition to save Hazelnut Grove, and it has more information in there. There's also been, you know, a certain amount of press. The Mercury just did an article. The Portland Tribune did an article. It's been featured on some of the TV stations. But I noticed in there they're talking about the one of the important things that people are that you all seem concerned with is the you know it being a self-governing, which I mentioned that you know Right to Dream 2 and Dignity Village were your predecessor had started earlier on that model. Talk about the importance of it being self-governing and whether that would be able to continue at the St. John's location that's been suggested.
Right.
Go ahead, Jesse, since Josh was talking. Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
Okay, on that issue, the reason that they, when they make the move to St. John's, they don't want us to keep the name, our name. They want to take our name from us, which is wrong, too, because we have a 501(c)(2), you know what I mean, and we have a bank account. And so like you said, we're self-governed, but you had to ask us that. What was the other question? Yeah.
What the importance to you is the self-governing. How does that work, and what's the importance of you being self-governing?
Well, what's important is that we're self-governing because we have bylaws you have to live by in order to come here. And so if you don't follow your bylaws and keep on following them, then you lose, like it's like a chain. You get a link in your chain, a week in your chain. So if we go there and they take our name from us, we won't have no, because board members from in here, and we have board members from out on the street that are always come to our GAs, and everything's discussed. One person can't just say no, you got to go it's not up to him. If an incident comes up, it's serious enough. We have to vote, and then if you get voted, kind of like a Survivor. You know, you vote, and if you get voted. If you get voted, you have to leave. You got to leave. You know what I mean? And most times,
you said GA. For people who aren't familiar, that's General Assembly, which is another thing that kind of came out of the Occupy movement. Of course, it has older, much older roots, but. So you make a, you know, you have a collective decision making process, and you have a board, and you feel, let me just go back to Josh, you feel that wouldn't be able to continue at the St. John's site, and would all the people be able to be accommodated at St. John's? Let me just, before you answer those, how many people are living there and have been living there and are living there now?
About 15, I think, right now, and there have been several dozen, probably, or at least a few dozen over the years who've come through here. You know, a lot of people have gone on to housing and various kinds of situations, but 15 now, and about 5 of us are planning to move to the St. John's Village right now.
And so that, so there's people who are, you know, feeling like that they'd rather just take the, you know, the St. John's option as a secure thing, whereas it looks like the people who remain are going to have to, you know, put up a fight basically to maintain the presence there at Hazelnut Grove there at North Greeley and Interstate. Would everybody be able to be accommodated at St. John's?
No, apparently not everybody. It just doesn't work for everybody for various reasons. For me, it does, but that's one of the problems.
Have you been, you know, in negotiation? You know, it seems like, you know, from what I've read in the media, it seems like most of them are sort of taking an approach that it's pretty much a done deal. They mention that there's opposition to it, but it seems like they're taking, obviously there's people who don't see it as a done deal. Is there any, you know, is the city Did they just come and give you an ultimatum? Have they opened up like a process of negotiation, or what's going on? Go back to Jesse with that.
Well, for them to move or stay, like the people that are going to stay here, if I'm one of them, they have to come and post it that we're going to be swept. And so then they give you like seven, I think it's 7 days. They come back in 7 days, and you don't leave on your own, and they're going to escort us out of here or whatever. But the thing about they really can't even do that now because of the virus, because the governor said not to be having gathering for people. And so why would we want to move from here, where we all know we're all right, to move over there where they're going to have other people moving in too, and who knows what's going on with them, you know what I mean? And then let's see, that's something I can say to you. So
you all have had to deal, you know, you've obviously gone through this whole pandemic together. You've obviously had to talk about it in your general assemblies. Has anybody come down with COVID among your members?
No, none of us have. We all take care of ourselves. We make anyone that leaves here, we wear a mask, and we ask people unless it's an absolute emergency, don't have people come here. You know what I mean? So, because that way, everyone's safe all the way around. But we do have guests that still come here, and we just all wear our mask when they're here, We also, the thing about this, we also help, back what you said, this village right here, even though Disney Village has been up longer than that, village as a model for all the other villages that they're building. That's what they did. And they told us one thing at our assembly, because Dugard came here and told us something and said this and that. But everything that they told us so far, they backpedaled or changed up on us. You know what I mean? So how can it's just like when they put a village in a neighborhood, they don't tell the neighborhood until after they move you in there. You see what I mean? And once you're in there, then they tell your neighborhood. So now the neighborhood that you're going to put the village in, they felt betrayed because they lied to you from the state, but we didn't lie to them. So the best thing to do is, if you ever do put a village in the neighborhood, be honest with them from the beginning, and then you don't have all the drama that's going on now. You know, move the other villages, people don't want you there because people are more understanding. Because trust is a very important thing. You know what I mean? And once you lie to someone and they feel that you lied to them, how are they going to trust you, right? And that's what the city does. They tell you one thing and they do another.
Yeah, it sounds like it's. Unclear to me exactly what sort of process the city has gone within itself. Maybe I'll go back to Josh Jesse, maybe I'll just ask you one more question after this, okay. And then we got to open up for the, you know, since it's a live call-in show, open up to listeners. But Josh, so do you have any idea what sort of process, who have you been working with over the years with the city, and to what, you know, did they discuss this decision at city council, do you know?
I don't think so. The Joint Office of Homeless Services has been involved, and maybe Jesse could comment on that, because there's someone in that office that know from previous to the Grove. But it's been a process of going on for a few years now, and at one point there was some kind of agreement to move the Grove to a new location and keep it as Hazelnut Grove, keep it as self-governed, just at a different location.
I actually had the totally mistaken impression that it had actually been moved, because I think I remember the last time, you know, it came into the media that there's that discussion, and I had visited the camp a couple times. They had a big public event a couple years ago that I went to, and I guess that was the period when there was a bunch of building that they actually building the tiny homes was going on. Let's just throw that to that last question to Jesse, and then have to let him go. So this talk about the relationship with the city. Josh mentioned that you know people with the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Is that mainly who you all have been dealing with?
Yeah, mostly who I deal with and most of us deal with is Lucas. He works right in the mayor's office, and he works for the other mayor, too. So he's always been in there. Even when we were doing our other camp, he was always there, and he was always the only one in the office. Well, maybe one of the first men that was always honest and straight with us. You know, and he didn't backpedal on us. He just told us straight. And then so he had a good rapport with mostly – he has a good rapport with a lot of the homeless people and the advocates out here. So that's who I would – if you guys want to talk to somebody, that's who I'd talk to, too, would be Lucas. And can I just say one thing? They say that this property is not safe. Well, here's the thing. Before 20 years ago or something on this property right here, they had a business and houses on this property. So they said they couldn't water it, but they could tie the water line right into it, but they didn't. You know what I mean? They don't – they don't want to do it.
You mean there was actually actually legal structures on that property there?
Yeah.
And
battery business.
Okay, well, listen, let me Jesse, let me let you go. I think
okay.
It was really great to talk to you, but as I said, it is a call-in program. I think there's a lot of people who would be interested in engaging with this, but since you both you're occupying all the available lines at the present. So thank you so much, Jesse. Good luck with everything.
Okay,
and,
thank you.
I'll carry on with Josh, and let me just give that number. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon. I'm Paul Rowland, the regular weekly host of this program. I'm talking from my home at a whole other part of Portland, the Montevilla neighborhood. And I'm talking with Josh, who's a resident of the Hazelnut Grove Village, which has been around for just over 5 years and is a tiny house camp or village for formerly houseless residents in transition. And 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, that's the number to join our conversation. Josh, let me just go, just backtrack and backfill a little bit. Exactly which department of the city is the owner of that land?
It's not totally clear. I'm not sure. I think part of what's now Hazelnut Grove may have been state land at one point, and part of it was city, and the part that was state land was sold or given to the city soon after Hazelnut Grove started, like DOT, Department of Transportation, ODOT.
Right, because that's a major thoroughfare there between Greeley and Interstate. It's a really interesting location, kind of noisy, I imagine. I'm sure you could tell us all about the difficulties, but I always found that to be fascinating. Both Overlook Park up above, kind of looking out at the. And I don't know, I always like the kind of North Portland industrial. I really like marginal areas. I don't know, but you're actually living there, so you have a very different perspective on it. But I'm sure lots of people have been up through there. I wonder if any of our listeners have actually been there. But this is a really important issue. You know, what just happened yesterday with the, you know, the first actual snow in a lot of parts of Portland, and it actually turning really cold, it seems to kind of put a punctuation mark on exclamation point on the what you're facing now, because you know I just read that actually cold weather emergency shelters didn't open last night because the policy is that they open only when the temperatures drop to 32 degrees, and it was actually just above that. With the winds gusting up to 17 miles an hour plus the the snow rain, it was obviously probably quite a bit colder. So people, some people might have given up their camps and gone in search of the shelter, thinking that they might find it. So obviously places like Hazelnut Grove are really important. It just seems to be really, really awkward, to say the least, that they've chosen this moment. So it looks like we got a caller, Peggy, on the line. Before, I just want to give you a chance to respond to what I just said about the weather and you know what people, you know, if everybody is actually going to be accommodated, even if people were to move out of Hazelnut Grove.
If everyone, well, yeah, I'm not sure what accommodations. Some people are really don't have a plan B right now, and it is a place where people can stay warm, among other things.
And out of the weather.
Oh yeah, warm, dry. People use propane heaters here. I don't personally, but I stay warm enough in an insulated structure, very sound structure. And there are other ways to heat it up, or just bundle up. You know, that works too most of the time.
Well, there must be a certain pride, you know, or satisfaction involved in. I don't know. Did you build your structure yourself?
Oh no, it was here when I arrived at the Grove, but I helped out a little around the Grove with other construction that was going on, kitchen and greenhouse and one or two of the houses that were still being built when I first moved in. But a lot of people did build their own house here, and or a few at least have built their own houses. And lots of volunteers have come in and helped with the construction groups and other groups. Some of them were built elsewhere and moved to the site here.
Yeah, well, I want to get into the, you know, speaking of environmental conditions, get into the some of the specifics that are mentioned in some of the articles and in the petition again, which is on my program page at kbo.fm Wednesday Talk Radio, where they mention the possibility of landslides. You had mentioned groundwater pollution or something like that, and I think maybe fire was a concern, but let's go to our first caller before we get into all that. Go ahead, Peggy. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Peggy Zabatsky, and I I need to let you know that I've been related to the village for how long? Like 3 years. I've been there as a visitor, and then on the board, and pretty much going down there a lot. I met the villagers first when I asked the older folks at the village who didn't have good access to shower facilities to come to my house every week and have showers. So I've been along with them for a long time now. And, you know, we don't really understand why the city would choose the winter to kick the village out. St. John's was kind of a bait and switch operation as far as a lot of the villagers were concerned, in that they promised to move the village as a whole, as an entity, as a collective, and then turned that sort of turned over into, well, we'll let you have first dibs on these quite lovely new cottages that they're building in St. John's, and you just come and our social workers will help you manage your lives. And the people like Jesse at that village, they are rugged individualists, and they can work together with a group of people who respect them and they respect, but they don't want no social worker poking into their lives all the time. So that does not work for all the people at the village. And five are going to St. John's, 10 are staying. One of whom is going to move back to his home state soon, but you know, we were always told, weren't we, Josh, about fire danger? And we have worked with the fire marshals of the city, and they've come down and inspect the brush cutting operation that people do to keep a, you know, safe ring around the village. And they've always been pleased with the work. So, you know, we've mitigated fire risk. And then they've come up in the last few weeks as they do this big media campaign with flyers home to people about why it's good to destroy the village. They added in two more risks, landslide and toxic soil. Now, nobody's ever showed us a map, chemical results with that there are toxins at the camp. And anyway, people are in houses up on foundations, right? And then they say there's a landslide risk. Well, if you look at the Portland landslide map that the city government put together, and you'll see that we aren't in further down the bluff. Yeah, there's landslide risk, but it's not shown at the area that the village is at the foot of that hill. And so it just seems real specious, and they're doing a real advertising job with people in the city to make them lose sympathy and say, oh, it's fine that they're kicking out these people out of their warm homes in the middle of winter.
Let me just ask you straight out then. I mean, first you, Peggy, and then Josh. So, you all sound like astute people. You've been dealing with the city for a few years. You've been, living by your smarts there at Digny Village. You've been, doing a whole really remarkable self-governing village for a few years. So what do you think's behind this? Why now?
You want to say something, Josh? I got my ideas.
The opening of the St. John's Village gives a kind of excuse, I guess. Any time previously, it would have been more like kicking everybody out to an uncertain future. But now they're able to say that this village in St. John's is available for anyone, even though it's not available for everyone, and it certainly doesn't work very well for everyone. But
there's amongst the hundreds and hundreds of unhoused people in Portland, I would think even in the St. John's area, there's quite a pool of people that they could, ask if they need a place and move in there. Think?
Yeah, that's one of the big points to be made, is that even if all of us were able to secure alternative housing that was just wonderful and met all our needs and desires to a T, if you remove this housing here, that's 15 spots that are no longer available for people who could really use them. There are thousands of people who could really use these spots, and so it seems really counterproductive to get rid of housing instead of keeping it for the people who can really use it and adding more.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've all had your difficulties. I'm sure you could probably talk at us for hours if you wanted to about various, interpersonal and whatever difficulties you have, as any group does, especially, living under the kind of stress that you all have to there. But it seems like it seems like it'd be a real shame to throw away such a successful model, which is now, as you said, is now being used, along with the Dignity Village and Right to Dream 2 as a model for other, including the St. John's Village that's opened up. But Peggy, we need to let
Can
you
I
go
speak
because,
to
as
it?
I said, there's only one other line. But let me just throw out to you a last question, Peggy. So what are you asking people to do? I know you've got this petition, but, people who are listening who are concerned, what would you like them to do to assist whatever your efforts are?
Well, I'm going to be a little rude and go back a second, say the centers of power in this city are not poor people, right? They are the people who own the land, the people who run the businesses. And Ted Wheeler is aligned with those people. The Overlook Association has a long history of not being friendly to Hazelnut Grove, unlike some of the neighborhood associations who are working with their houseless population. The Overlook Association is not friendly to Hazelnut Grove, and has years ago threatened the city with legal proceedings if they allowed us to the village to stay there, and the city responded and said, okay, we'll give you get them into a new village. That started this process, so the village was formed when Hales was still mayor, and Ted Wheeler has never been in the depths of his policies a friend to the houseless. Like we say, there's no sweeps, but no sweeps during COVID, but we see the sweeps all the time, and so they're bowing to that pressure of the people who own things. We have a campaign. Our petition already has close to 3,000 signatures, many of which are organizations supporting us. We want people to go to either your link or to the Oregon Poor People's campaign page on Facebook and sign the petition. Get the petition out to as many people as you can about saving the village. Monday, February 1st at 1 p.m., we'll have many of the village residents and their allies and supporters at City Hall to turn over those petitions. And we're going to insist that Wheeler and Dan Ryan, who are the ones responsible for houseless issues, sit down with people and negotiate to let the village stay. Kicking them out during the winter, during COVID, it's just evil and heartless. And people should see that and should see that there have been lots of lies about the conditions at the village put forward to try to, do a public relations campaign when they should be worrying about people being cold and hungry. They're doing public relations campaigns around destroying safe harbor for people at that village. And so I'll go off the air. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So I would venture to guess probably phone calls to and emails to Mayor Wheeler and Dan Ryan would probably be appreciated as well. Well, thank you, Peggy. Now a line is open. If you want to call in and join the conversation, we've got about 20 minutes left, so do it sooner rather than later. 503-231-8187. Perhaps there's a resident from the Overlook neighborhood or even a member of the neighborhood association who's listening to the show would like to weigh in, or other people from the houseless community who look to Hazelnut Grove as a model. I know there's a lot of informal self-governing camps. I live out in the outer part of Southeast Portland, and there's just a lot of camps, and there's some really large tarps that obviously encompass a number of people, and then a bunch of tents together. And I always kind of wonder how they work. I'm sure there must be, having a space where you can actually meet together, although obviously with COVID that everything's so much more difficult, but having a kitchen and having spaces must be really, really an advantage in the world of people who don't have the larger houses like I and probably most of our listeners do. Maybe just talk about what we left off with Peggy and what I was saying. Then I have some more questions for you. Go ahead, Josh.
Mm-hmm. We have an outdoor space where we gather even before COVID. It's a, sort of a common area with a roof or just another right next to it. It's just totally outside. Those are places where we've always got together to talk around once a week. I was just wondering, are you anywhere near the new Agape Village? There's an Agape Church in the southeast.
Where is that located?
Oh, I'm not really sure. Maybe 70th or 80th, somewhere around there. There's a church. I think it's called Agape.
Yeah, I think that's quite a bit further south, I believe, from where I am. Maybe more towards the Lentz or Foster Powell neighborhoods. possibly. I think I read about that.
Some of the
but it looks like
here who build are, have been involved in building that. So that's one of the things that Hazelnut Grove has helped facilitate by housing some of the people who have been working on building new villages.
So you, from based on your experience, and obviously you all built on the experience of Dignity Village and Right to Dream too, I'm sure there's a lot of interconnections, but that's a, you know, that's another reason why it's so important, is because it can, you know, help seed other models like that. I mean, obviously, you know, I'll just say right out, I'm obviously, you know, real estate speculation and the financialized capitalist system are, for me, the root of the problem and need to go. We have to, we can't keep living like in this ferocious competition for the few scarce goods that the billionaire class leaves us. But that said, we do have to do our best to live within what we've got. And it just, it's inspiring to me to see things like Hazelnut Grove and the others, people who really, you know, put a lot of effort into that. But you can continue on that. But we got another caller I'd like to respect. Malcolm, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me on. I was I called in to help amplify the message that Hazelnut Grove was established and has to be and has been a real source of comfort and shelter to people for 5 years in an environment where they've been harassed and messed with over the years, but still managed to hold on with a really strong community. I fear that the city's philosophy towards places like this, while maybe not written, is something along the lines of thou shalt not allow such a good example to continue, not in an environment where the developers and moneyed interests are supposed to be the only way out. They've tried to contain people's solutions, grassroots solutions, because that those solutions control and outside their agenda. And I think it's extremely important to keep Hazelnut Grove and to duplicate it around the country, because it's one of the few places I've seen during my travels where they have an environment which is actually home-like. The shelters, the outdoor shelters that I've seen in other places are often very rudimentary and very difficult to exist in. This is a treed environment with paths and plants, and while it may be somewhat noisy and polluted from being right next to the road like that, is still vastly improving over things like we've seen downtown, which are excellent facilities, but they have very little of the warmth necessary to project a healing environment.
Well, yeah, and considering all the camps I've seen, like, you know, right in you know, freeway on-ramps and such, it's definitely... I mean, it's a sick thing that we have to make these even make these comparisons. But yeah, I mean, it's just remarkable that they you know, it's remarkable that I consider remarkable they are able to establish the camp based on, you know, the difficulty of doing anything that's out of the ordinary in this culture. But yeah, thanks for calling in with that. Any other thoughts, or what are you looking for people to do? Are you going to be signing the petition, getting in touch with City Hall?
I have signed the petition as myself, and I am seeking permission from the local Veterans for Peace group to add our names as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Malcolm. As I've said repeatedly, there's only one line open, so I'm letting people have their say and getting other people the opportunity to chime in as well. Thanks, Malcolm. Always good to hear from you. 503-231-8187. We only have about 10 minutes left. 503-231-8187. Josh, this is really, for me, it's just the power of community radio to be able to hear voices that aren't, you know, you aren't heard from too much, and to really get a little deeper look at these things. I'm really learning an awful lot myself. So where do you see this going? Do you obviously must see the chance that Hazelnut Grove will actually continue there at the site.
Oh yeah, we've seen examples where things have been able to continue even though they were threatened with not being able to continue. So huge amount of support has been apparent in these last few days and weeks. So we're staying optimistic.
Okay, well, with that, let's go to our next caller. John, go ahead. What have you got to say?
Good morning. I'll make a quick comment and listen to your reaction. I've been homeless before, and I've listened to, starting with Bud Clark, talk about solving the homelessness problem in Portland. So that was way 30 or more years ago. Well, we can't solve these problems on a local basis because their homelessness is all over the country. If one area spent the money to solve it in their area, it would just get flooded by people hearing, oh, Portland's got all kinds of resources. So it has to be solved on a national level along with the local level. It can't be so we're just spitting into the wind by I'm not saying your discussion is useless, but we're never going to solve it locally. It's just not going to work. Anyway, I'll have a good one. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Well, I'll let Josh take that on. My initial response is, obviously, now that we got a Biden administration who is seemingly more open, although he seems to be a much of a neoliberal in the old stamp, so I don't see the them say taking on real estate speculation, the speculating in rental units, which seems to be one of the big things. They're still talking about building more affordable housing when we have a vacancy rate of existing units that's very high, which is just absolutely ridiculous. So obviously the systemic change is clearly the solution, but that's not to say that pushing from the ground and forcing people to accept models like this around the country seems to be a way of pushing the envelope from below. I don't know. What do you think, Josh?
Well, I think it's got to work on it on whatever levels we can, multiple levels simultaneously. For anybody who's got any influence on a national level, state level, international level, absolutely. It's important to work on it in all these different ways. The local level is maybe more accessible. It's more of it's where we live, and it just provides more opportunities for concrete engagement in some ways, as in this immediate example that we're talking about.
But also, it does challenge, in the actual property relations, the idea that, you're pushing back against the idea that you have to own your own property, which costs what in Portland now a minimum, of a couple, if you're really, really, really lucky, $200,000 to $300,000 and then up to, whatever. It depends on the neighborhood, but and people just a lot of people just don't have that kind of money. So people are forced to rent, and the rental market. Well, let's just bracket COVID, which is thank goodness there's rental eviction moratoriums for now. Who knows what's going to happen once the pandemic lets up? But as I said, there's this totally distorted market distorted by real estate speculation. So, you know, so obviously anything that challenges the dominant, you know, private property relationships seems to be a really, you know, something that really needs to be encouraged. Anyway, that's what I think. Oh, my computer screen went blank, so I can't see who's calling in. But go ahead. What do you think about all that, Josh?
Well, I think you make a lot of good points. You were asking earlier about what is the apparent motivation for this latest push to evict the Grove, and on the topic of the rental market and the real estate market, I think it seems likely that a lot of people in the neighborhood fear that their property values might be affected by the existence of an unconventional thing like this tiny home village.
Which is what spurred, you know, the irrational white flight from the cities when people feared that people of color would move into their neighborhoods,
yeah.
and who knows what they would do to lower their property values. I don't know, that seems to be this deep fear within the sort of the white privileged society.
Yeah, and then people go to neighborhood association meetings and put pressure on city officials. Yeah.
So have you ever been to any of the were there ever any meetings between the Overlook Association and Hazelnut Village?
Yeah, there was a long process in the early years of Hazelnut Grove to try to come up with a good neighbor agreement with the neighborhood association. And that went on for a while. It never actually got finalized, but that was we attended a lot of the meetings. It's been a long saga. Some Hazelnut Grove supporters were on the board of the neighborhood association for a while.
Well, that's a shame to put a lot of work into something that never actually ultimately bore fruit. What were some of the sticking points, do you know?
I'm not totally sure. I think even back then they may have been pushing for some definite cutoff date, some agreement to keep this as a temporary phenomenon. Explicitly, you know, and of course that wasn't what people wanted who are here.
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, we only have a couple minutes left. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm talking with Josh, a several-year resident of the Hazelnut Grove Village, which started out as people in tents and evolved into a pretty well-running a village with tiny houses and a kitchen and meeting space and a self-governing organization that actually evolved into its own nonprofit that now is being threatened. The city is threatening to cut off their services within a month. That was announced a week ago Monday, and Josh and other people involved and allies who've been calling in have been talking about what's going to happen. The city proposes people to move to St. John, tiny house village in St. John's, which will be managed by Do Good, which I just find I don't know, I'm sure they do a lot of good, but it's just an interesting name. Anyway, a social service nonprofit organization, whereas Dignity Village, Hazelnut Grove Village has been running as a self-governing entity. We only have like a minute or two left of final thoughts for people who are listening, what you're feeling about it and where things are going to go.
Well, I think anybody who is curious might want to actually come down to the Grove and visit and check it out. It's really a beautiful spot. and we have a beautiful view of the city, and you can see how it works here, and meet the people, and hopefully, you know, see what we can do to allow people to stay. It's not just the cutting off of services that's being threatened. It's actually pushing people out and demolishing the houses. But we're trying to get an appointment to deliver that petition, which has 3,800 signatures right now, I think, and trying to push to get some negotiations started with the city. And I think, but the issue of services, the only services that are provided by the city are sanitation, basically, the servicing of porta potties and the dumpster. So,
thank you. That was a question I actually meant to ask early on. So that's obviously you could probably even potentially find some way of managing those, maybe with outside help. There's a bunch of other things I did want to get into, but I think we've covered quite a bit here, and we are right up at the 9 o'clock hour. So, Josh, I have to let you go. Thank you so much, and good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you, too. It's been great talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye. This is Paul Rowland signing off for Wednesday Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular